So at this time, I think what we will be doing, we have a number of folks that are waiting online to share their thoughts on the petition, why they brought it forward, and any additional information they would like to share with the commission. We have six to go through, and with the time being that it is, what we will do is go through each petition, allow the individual to share their thoughts with us. After we've heard from everyone, we'll circle back, and then the department will give their information and thoughts. Does that sound good?
Yep.
And then, Director Cushman, you're going to introduce each one and provide any details that we need to know.
Yep, sure will. Thank you, Madam Chair, and hopefully everybody can hear without being right in front of the microphone. So, Commissioners, if you turn in your book to page 13, but it would be listed as item number 7, that would be the beginning of your petition section of the book. As Madam Chairwoman just spoke about, there are multiple petitions here today, actually 7 individual petitions, 6 different topics that we will go over, and as Madam Chair just said, we're going to proceed here and give each of the petitioners the opportunity to present to you their reasons for submitting the petition, explain some of the changes that they are asking for. We'll give them all the opportunity, and then we will circle back and take action and present some more department information as once we get through them. So the first one on the list has to do with yellow perch daily limits. And the first petition was submitted by Mr. Clint Hay from Brookings. So, Mr. Hay, if you're on the call, we'd give you the opportunity right now to speak to the commission on your petition that has been submitted.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, thank you for your time. My name is Clint Hay. I'm from Brookings. I want to discuss about the petition in front of you regarding yellow perch limits. It's no secret that here in the last few years that ice fishing has become very, very popular in northeast South Dakota. And a lot of people come here to target yellow perch, specifically in the wintertime. And in the last few years, we have seen a very steady decline and a decrease of our perch populations in our lakes. You can go and look at the lake survey nettings that's on the GFP website, and you look at Dry 2, you look at Ponset, you look at Bitter Lake, and those netting surveys basically show that we have a decline in perch population. I would like to see the limits to change, from a 15 statewide to just, basically change it to 10 just East River, and then keep it as 15 West River, and also during the, in the Missouri River Valley. Nowadays with the technology that anglers have with, live imaging sonar, snow bears, et cetera, that it's a lot easier for us fishermen to find these schools of perch and get on them when we do find them. The harvest rate is just absolutely crazy, and it's been this way for the last couple years, especially with an influx of guides and everything that we've had. Right now, we have 25 guides that are currently in business up in northeast South Dakota, and they are running multiple snow bears a day. And you do the math on it of, basically 15 perch a day per person, and there's usually, 3 people in a snow bear. You do the math, and that's quite a bit of fish that's getting harvested almost every day in our lake. So I would just like for the commission to take a look at this and be more proactive instead of reactive on our yellow perch populations here. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
All right, so Madam Chair and Commissioners, we'll move on to the second petitioner who also submitted one, Mr. Nicholas Morris from Sioux Falls. And again, his petition is relative to the yellow perch daily limit as well. So Nicholas or Nick, are you on the line? You'd like to speak to the commission on your petition?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Hey, thank you for calling on me here or there. So, almost the same exact petition as Clinton. He's nailed a lot of key points there. So I guess, we've been down this road already with it. We're looking at dividing the state, 10 East River, 15 West River, to help with confusion, to help with keeping the CO officers more efficient in the field. It's a perfect scenario. your East River perch are built differently than your West River. And I think that would be a great way to prolong our bites, our harvestable bites a year from 10 to 12 inch perch. They're there. Get it. Perch go in cycles. Their lifespan's 5 years-ish. You know, we understand that, but the window is getting smaller and smaller, and our anglers are getting smarter, tech savvy. They're getting busier. I mean, like Clint just said, with how many guys that we have up there, that's insane. It's a pure commercial town of Webster right now. It's pure commercial. Yeah, it saved the town probably, but it's hurting our waters. And right now we actually have a time to be more proactive and get ahead of this game, get ahead of the curve. Try it for 5 years. Try it for a lifespan of a perch and see if we can get those numbers to prolong. Because I'll be honest, 10 years ago, we never had 30 snow bears at a landing. 10 years ago, we never had live. 10 years ago, we never had any of that. We never had probably half the anglers. I'm not sure exactly on the numbers. But what we did have was 15-inch perch. And right now, I wouldn't hold your breath to find a 15-inch perch. And quite honestly, I know they're in there, but they're extremely hard to find. So I think it's time we do something. And, yeah, appreciate you calling on me.
All right. Thank you, sir. Commissioners, moving on to page 15, number 8. Item number 8 in your booklet would be from Mr. Daniel Fuchsa, if I'm pronouncing that right, from Spearfish. And his petition has to do with a deer draw structure. And so, Mr. Fuchsa, if you're on, if you'd like to speak to the commission on this particular petition.
Yes, thank you very much for having me on and taking the time to listen to me here. So, my petition I put in is regarding the deer draw structure that had changed back in 2019. They had tried out to get more people a chance at having a deer license for firearms in South Dakota by just letting us selectively apply for only two first choice licenses. Previous to that, it was unlimited for all the deer draws that we had, so it was pretty much a free for all. Myself at the time, I was very hesitant to accept this new change, but thought give it some time. I dug in a year or two after that, trying to get a petition together just with signatures, and found out that's not typically the way this works. And then I found out about the 3-year review plan that was going to happen in 21 about the deer draw structure. So that happened, and it sounds like the results there. I just listened to the audio, and I did send all the commissioners an email with that. Their PowerPoint that they had at that 2021 meeting, November 4th, 5th, and also had some of the results they talked about. They only really came out with 400 more unique hunters with that. So their goal, I don't believe, was met at all. It's only a 1% increase in unique hunters receiving a firearms license for, you know, we're talking like 30-some thousand hunters that are applying there. So it's a pretty minute amount. Also, things that I've noticed just for me is that I'm having a harder time drawing the licenses that I want, even on my first draw. People, it seems to me, it's turning into like Wyoming, where these preference points start to creep. People are buying more preference points as they had in that actual structure that they had showed in their PowerPoint. And then, so like the muzzleloader last year still took me 7 years to pretty much have a guaranteed license. Also, I didn't draw my first choice Black Hills, which any whitetail is typically 1 year. I had no trouble doing that every other year. So I haven't seen a big benefit, and most of the sportsmen that I've talked to are on the same page as me. They like the previous draw structure. I'm just worried, too, about I've got a six-year-old son and a daughter that plan to hunt, and we're getting into that mentor hunting, but these preference points will just push kids out or these younger generations of being able to take advantage of these licenses, too. It kind of sounds silly that, you know, letting everybody have as many first choice as they want. Might work, I thought that also, but you know, previously in years two, it seemed like I could rely every other year on having the licenses I had wanted. We eat strictly just deer, so those things have all helped. Now I've moved on to hunting Montana with a deer license every year just to make get another deer. I've also noticed just for the deer licenses, I might get one first choice, and then a second, it ends up being a poor choice of a tag just in any whitetail in an area that's been hit by EHD, you know, where he wants to hunt. And then I go hunt that, and I find deer and things like that, but they're poor quality. I just don't see the numbers, and I don't feel like it's worth it to take an animal out of that unit at the time. So I just would like a chance for since it didn't seem like there was a giant success with this in 2021, this to be readdressed. I have a lot of people that agree with me on this, and some people just don't seem to care, but they've all agreed that we feel like it's been harder to draw our first choices by the changes that have been in place since 2019. So I appreciate my time here. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Madam Chair, we'll go to page 16, item number 9. This is a petition that is submitted by Mr. Bob Brandt from Rapid City. And this one has to do with elk drawing preference points. So, Mr. Brandt, if you're on the call, please go ahead and address the commission on your justification for the petition.
Hello, can you guys hear me?
Yes, sir, go ahead.
Hello.
Yep.
Can you still hear me?
Yes, Bob, go ahead.
I'm a little technically challenged, so I'm on the phone here. Yeah, my name's Bob Brandt. I've been applying for elk tags in South Dakota since the mid-1980s. I finally drew my rifle tag in 98 with 14 years preference, and I drew my archery tag in 2017, also with 14 years preference. I settled for a Custer State Park cow tag back in 85 to get me some experience hunting elk before I went to Montana for a year, and I have over 25 points for the Custer State Park archery tag and the bighorn tag. I was the co-chairman of the Black Hills chapter of the Elk Foundation for the first couple of years when we started in the state, and we fully supported the institution of the $5 application fee, knowing that the money raised would go to support our incredible but limited elk population. So now I have 14 years preference for my second rifle tag. I'm going to turn 70 years old this summer, and while I'm in pretty good shape, I realize the chances of me hunting elk again in the Black Hills are getting slim. Like most of us old-timers, we've been faithfully sending in our $15 to $20 application fees for a long time and seen the number of applicants rise every year, and so our chances of drawing a tag get less and less every year. When you're in your 40s and 50s, it doesn't seem so hopeless, but with the average number of points needed to draw an elk tag exceeding 20 now, we quickly realize that our chances are getting slim. John Canta told me that you guys have received other requests to alter the preference system and rejected all of them. I sincerely hope you'll consider this one worthy of a change. And by the way, John's dad, who just turned 70, is all for this proposal. Well, this change certainly will not guarantee us another elk license. It may give some of us a chance to hunt elk in the Black Hills while we can still enjoy it and give it the effort a hunt of this quality deserves. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Brandt. All right, moving on to the next one. Again, we're going to go back to Mr. Daniel Fuchsa from Spearfish. He has a second petition here that has to do with the elk draw process and the time of the year that it's completed. So, Mr. Fuchsa, again, if you'd like to address the commission.
Yes, I appreciate it again, as I said before. I also emailed this to all the commissioners. I just put together a small chart and some information on other Western states with elk applications and when they're due, that type of thing, et cetera. Basically, I'm asking that I've had 100% support from sportsmen that I've talked to on this also, so it's something that seems to be very favorable, but I know there's more work than it seems to have this done. But the petition is to increase or speed up the elk draw for any elk that we have in South Dakota to be completed by March 15th. I picked that date because on the emails you'll see pretty much every Western state, you still have time to apply to those after that March 15th date. Basically, I'm asking this because South Dakota has this other gentleman that has had some tags in the quite a while ago, has seen it's kind of turning into a once-in-a-lifetime license for us. So most of us, you know, a lot of us elk hunters too from South Dakota, we have to go elsewhere, but we make all these plans in January or earlier, put our time in for this, you know, time off, I should say, which we don't have tons of time, but, and then spend a lot of money out of state. Most of these licenses go from anywhere from upper 600s to close to $1,000 just to get in any elk tag at these other states. So by requesting this, we would know if we were lucky enough. Most of the people in my age range have 10 points or more. You know, you're kind of in that wheelhouse to possibly get lucky enough to draw one of these elk licenses in South Dakota, which we would do pretty much anything for. And it's something that I want to spend all my time and effort into. And everyone else that I've talked to just thinks it'd be a very helpful thing if we could get that completed earlier. Just the draw. I also talked to a couple biologists, one from Montana and one from Wyoming. They were both in agreement that they've never seen any large issues from winter kills. That typically only happens with deer and antelope. EHD doesn't have a major effect on elk like it does the deer and antelope. So by using the common trends with an average of since 2010 to 2021 in this chart that I emailed, there's been an average of 560 licenses, with the biggest extreme being 38 more than that, and the lowest was 81 less licenses in a year throughout that time period. So it hasn't changed a whole lot. And those other biologists agreed also that by putting the draw out before our information is done by our South Dakota biologists and obtained for this year's cow counts and elk counts, their flyovers, things like that that do every 4 years, it doesn't seem to have an effect by putting the licenses out ahead of their yearly review of the elk. So if that is something to consider, we'd really appreciate that. It would help us get, you know, spend more quality time to enjoy this beautiful state we got and once in a lifetime elk licenses we get. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Going on to the next petition, we have one in respect to West River deer hunting and specifically a unit adjustment in Corson County. So this proposal was submitted by Mr. Matthew Skoldahl, I think it's pronounced. But Matthew, would you like to speak to the commissioners on your petition?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
You know, I'm a resident out here in western Corson County, and the deer population of mainly muley and white-tailed doe are just exceeding just a lot. We have probably 40 to 50 doe just hanging around our yard. They take and they'll eat our spring grazing and stuff that we kind of depend on for calving to get us through. They're utilizing that before our cattle can so much as get a chance to utilize it. Probably within a mile of our home operation here, I would say there's probably 100 to 150 doe. I would like to see, you know, Corson County maybe split at Highway 65. So maybe get some hunting pressure out here to manage the population, you know, of the doe, where I've talked to people more East River on the eastern side of the county. They don't have such high doe numbers, and it would be able to maybe draw less tags on that side and more tags over here to manage the population better. I just appreciate your time and your consideration over it, and I thank you very much.
All right, thank you, sir. Appreciate that. And then the next petition, the last one we have here, is in respect to paddlefish snagging on Lewis and Clark, are those waters just below Fort Randall Dam. Mr. Aaron Olson from Sioux Falls, go ahead, sir, and talk to the commission about your petition.
Yeah, thank you. I guess I fished the river system quite a bit from areas like Fort Thompson and down in Yankton where there are paddle fishing seasons, and I guess I fished the most in the Pickstown area, and from there I've seen just the numbers I think have gone up over the years, and the amount of paddlefish I've seen down there, I feel like it should be able to have a limited draw, obviously, season for them, but something where we could have that opportunity to harvest those fish. And I did look. There's really nothing out there as far as numbers. I haven't seen anything as far as surveys, so I guess I don't really know what the numbers have done over the years. But, yeah, I would just propose there would be some sort of limited tag allocation for that area of the river. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you submitting that petition. So, Madam Chair and Commissioners, that's the last petition that you have, the seven petitions in front of you. Madam, I think, go ahead if you want to make
Do any of the commissioners have any questions before we move on to Secretary Kirschman in terms of those that have submitted a petition? Do you have any questions for the individuals that have submitted? All right, Director Kirschman.
Very good, Madam Chair. So I guess as you described to everybody the process here, we're going to circle back to the beginning, and we'll start with the yellow perch petitions. But before we get into that conversation, I believe we're going to do the presentation from our staff that they have put together on yellow perch populations and some of those dynamics in the lakes across South Dakota. I think you will find this very informational and some very good data for your conversation. So with that, I'm going to ask Mark Ermer, who is our fisheries supervisor up in Northeast South Dakota, to provide a presentation to you on yellow perch population and factors and influences on yellow perch. So, Mark, where are you on? There you are, sir.
Hello. Let me try to share my screen here. Okay, can you all see that presentation?
Yes.
Okay. Good afternoon, Madam Chairman, members of the Commission, and Secretary Roebling. Today I want to just go over some information about perch populations, both research and regulations over about the last 30 years in South Dakota. So that conversation kind of has to start with the past. So we have done a lot of work over the last 30 years on perch. We've done 16 different master's and doctorate level studies with SDSU, South Dakota State University, and for good reason. Perch are number two fish in South Dakota, only behind the very popular walleyes. And so I'm gonna walk through some, these are a list of the every single research project, those 16 I talked about. I'm not gonna read each one, I'm gonna highlight some of the things we've learned over that course of time. And one of the things you're going to see a lot is year class, and I just want to make sure that you guys know what a year class is. That is basically the same species of fish that are all the same age. Sort of like I have a third grader, and he has a group of third graders in that same class, and we can follow that group of students that are all the same age, the fourth, fifth, sixth. So that's what a year class means, and like I said, you will see that a lot. So going back to way back to 1991, John Lott, he was not the grandfather of perch research in South Dakota. I was told to say that. But he did start it all off in 91. And what we found out from him, we have two different population types of perch in South Dakota. And I'll get into that a little bit more later. Some of the other highlights, larval abundance was related to year class strength. We monitored that for a lot of years, and that told us, you know, to some extent what we could expect a few years down the road. There was low competition with black bullheads, one study showed us. The perch are the most consumed prey source for top-level predators in South Dakota. So all those walleyes we like, all the northern pike, you know, white bass, everything in the lake eats perch. So that's why it's a really important fish. Also, some other highlights. Environmental conditions really influence year class strength. Increase in precipitation, so rising water, less wind in the spring, and warmer temperatures. All these things are kind of a lot to ask for South Dakota. We understand that, but those are the years that favor strong production of perch. And then also weather influences year class strength in small wetlands as well as our big lakes. Freshwater shrimp are our number one prey source. I mean, that is why we have the high quality perch in South Dakota that people come here for. We have very, very productive systems and abundance of these shrimp, and that is what makes these big, you know, jumbo-type perch people are here for. Also, cold fronts can impact or do not impact perch hatch, we found out in the hatchery experiment, but those same cold fronts that we see in the spring often, they can limit perch fry survival because the fish don't die or they don't stop hatching from their egg, but they do settle to the bottom and they may starve at that point or be predated on. And then also when spawning conditions are favorable, good reproduction can be seen across the regions. And just the last one here, smallmouth bass predation does not seem to limit perch recruitment, and environmental variables influence perch populations more than genetics. We've done testing on both of these types of populations, And it really is what the lake has to offer determines the type of perch we have in that system. And here's some, we talked, the petitions both talked a little bit about stocking. And we've done a lot of this. We started this in 2008 at Blue Dog, refined our techniques, and we raised fingerlings, and we stocked them over a lot of years. And my counterpart down in the southeast part of the state, Dave Lucchese, he has stocked a lot of these fish, and they've evaluated it since that time. So I talked a little bit earlier about the really important point that there's two different types of perch populations in South Dakota. We have a high-quality population. These are what people come here for. They have very fast growth. Their max size can be over 12 inches. These are jumbos. But also these populations have inconsistent recruitment. We don't see year classes produced every year here. So that's part of the reason why there's also variable abundance. From year to year, these populations go up and down. We call them kind of boom and bust fisheries because when a big year class comes through, there's lots, and then we don't have any for a few years. It goes down, and then it always comes back. And the key to this group of fish is that they're very short-lived. They live between 3 and 5 years, and then they will die naturally. Even when they're a nice 10-inch fish, they look perfectly healthy, they will disappear the next year. And then we have another quality, a different type that we call poor-quality populations, where they're slow growth, maximum size is typically 8 or 9 inches. They're more consistent. They produce fish in these systems every year, which maintains a very high abundance. And these fish tend to be longer lived. They're 6 to 8 years old. So those are important things to know about these things. And genetics, again, we know that genetics doesn't cause these differences because we've taken fish from both of these populations, put them in a similar environment, and we've seen the growth be exactly the same. So we know genetics is not the difference here. So this question came up, and we've kind of been here before, and I wanted to go back and show you the experience that we had. We did have a 10-fish daily limit on perch, and that's what this petitions are asking for. That started in 2002, and it was all the counties represented in blue here in northeastern South Dakota. And that limit was 10 each of perch, crappie, and bluegill at the time. So why did we do that? And back then, they were largely social reasons. The fishing was very good. This was early 2000s. We were coming off the 90s, which were phenomenal. Anglers were concerned, just like they are today, that the fishing would not last. And the public favored this limit reduction. You know, a limit mentality kind of is, it's easier to, if you can attain a limit easier, then you will go home happy, you know, and you can increase angler satisfaction. So we made the change largely on these, for these reasons. The data wasn't suggesting it was necessary, but the public did, so we made a social change. So what happened? You know, and we had this experiment in place for over 10 years, and what we found out that this daily limit was not enough, it was not enough reduction in harvest to extend good fishing, which was hoped to be the goal. The perch populations continued to fluctuate. We continued to see this boom-bust cycle. Year class strength and mortality were the big drivers in our perch in this state. And the hot bite did continue to develop, but obviously in different lakes each year. Again, lending this to this boom and bust cycle that we see in South Dakota. So this graph I'm going to spend a little time on because there's really good information on here, and it's really... So first I want to describe the graph. And what you're seeing on the left is the numbers. And in this case, it's referring to catch in blue and harvest in red. And then on the bottom, we've got years. And this is a lot of years of data, almost 15 plus years of data. And this is creel survey information at Wabay Lake. And, you know, this is probably one of the best data sets in the country. That very seldom will you see a creel survey for that many years in a row on a lake. So we could really closely monitor the harvest and the catch at this lake during this time. So the graph is broken up into three segments. We have 25 fish limit. That's what we had before we made the change in 2001 to the 10 fish limit in the Northeast. And then we went and had that limit during these years between these black bars until 2010 when we switched the limit statewide to 15. So what you see in the graph is this. It was really good in the 90s. The lakes were just filled up, and this is something that we call in the fisheries world a reservoir effect. When you have a dry dam or a dry piece of ground and you add water to it, you see it very often in, when they fill a reservoir. You see very good production. All of this submerged vegetation is breaking down. There's new nutrients coming in. You tend to have fast growth rates, very good reproductive events. There's very little competition in the system. And that is no doubt what we saw here in the 90s. And that is what I would term the reservoir effect. They just filled up. For 10 to 15 years, you're going to have phenomenal production. And we did. And then, unfortunately, what we saw is these lakes sort of maintain water levels and things stabilized. Those perch population wasn't able to sustain those high levels. And I really think the reservoir effect shows that those are unsustainable growth rates. What was happening back here in the 90s, early 2000s, that's not something we could have ever expected to maintain. This bump over here later probably represents the more normal, what we can expect now. But you can see, we had the limit on during this time, and we saw a precipitous decline in the perch catch and harvest during this time. And we feel like this is driven by mortality, and I'll get into that more. But that's, even with the regulation in place for 10-plus years on a lake where this should have worked, because Wabe is one that actually has a very high-quality population, but these fish actually do grow very older than any other state in the high population or high quality population of the state. We do have perch out there that are 7 and 8 years old pretty regularly. So this is the lake it should have worked on if it ever had a chance, and it did not. And then we had high water in 09, 10, and 11, and without the regulation in place, we saw this very good increase. And these were great fishing years in Wabe, even though they weren't as high as what happened during the 90s. So here's another example, the next lake. This is Bitter Lake, another one of our very important lakes, and we're looking at that same time period with harvest information again. And in, you know, when the lake first filled up, there really wasn't a perch component to that lake here in the early 2000s. But again, we had high water in 9, 10, and 11, which created a great perch reproduction, and that lake shot up, that abundance of perch shot up. And these were phenomenal years of perch fishing in northeast South Dakota at Bitter Lake. But again, as those fish aged and we got to 4 or 5 years old and they all died naturally, we weren't able to sustain that population. So just a good, another example. And this is the third and last example of lake survey, you know, information. First, I want to explain it's a little different. So the number on this side of the graph is population number. These were population estimates we did during these years when we first opened Reef Lake. So we started with a population of about 100,000 perch in that lake. And this regulation we had on was 5 fish daily with only 1 over 10. This is a very, very restrictive regulation. So if there was ever a chance for us to maintain good perch fishing through time because of a regulation, this should have been the case. But unfortunately, what we saw is that very high perch population within a 5 or 6 year period, again, as fish aged to that 5 and 6 year old, they disappeared. And again, this was probably not driven by harvest because that very, very restrictive regulation was on at the time. Just another example where we seem to lose the fish whether you catch them and harvest them or not. And this is the last, this is another graph. This is our one of the tables we get on all of our lakes every year. And this is just to provide an example of these high-quality lakes, the ones that have these big, fast-growing perch that are short-lived. And this is, so down this side is the last 10 years of lake survey information we've been there on. And then you've got age across the top, up to 10 years old, the fish that we age, that we catch every year. And then this N number is the number of perch we catch in each years of that survey. And then it's obviously broken down as they age, they get larger, and these are the fish sizes. And what I want to just demonstrate is that, you know, the highlighted year classes, we're going to follow them through time in 12. This is a huge year class at 4 inches. The next year, it was 624 fish at 6 inches. And then by age three, we were only down to 10 fish at 8 inches. So, and then another one at the top, you can see we went from 250 to 41. We didn't sample in 2020, so there's a gap, but those same fish were 4 years old in 21, and there was only two fish left. And the complete lack of all these fish between 5 and 10 is what happens in our lakes. Unfortunately, our fish grow very fast, and they die very young. And again, all of this happened in a lake where there's little to no perch harvest on this lake during this 10-year period. If anybody knows anything about cattail kettle the last 10 years, there's been almost no fishing pressure during the winter. So these fish did not get removed by anglers. They simply died of natural mortality. Again, a little bit more information about perch stocking. We have done it, started in 2008. We stocked 30 million fry in 24 different stockings in different lakes on different years. We've stocked 25 million eyed eggs in 16 different stockings. And then we've also stocked 2.5 million fingerlings in 100 different stocking events and evaluated all of those. And what we found is when we came back the years after stocking, we didn't produce very many perch. We did sometimes produce some perch, but those perch fisheries seemed to never produce very good perch fishing. And we never produced a hot bite, you know, where everyone's going to the lake to catch perch. It just never happened as a result of our stocking. And these stockings were often dwarfed by natural year classes, either produced the same year that we stocked it or the next year or the year after. North Dakota had similar experience with perch fingerling production. They did it for a lot of years. And 20 years ago, they realized the same as we did, that they just didn't contribute to very good fishing in the future. And they stopped doing it. We do stock adult perch. I just want to add, usually in a winter kill situation, we've done over 100,000 adult perch in this area to restart perch population, and that works very well, and we'll continue to do that. So the other point is regulations. We have pretty conservative regulations already compared to our neighboring states in this part of the world. Minnesota has 20 a day for perch, North Dakota's 20, Iowa's 25, Nebraska's the most conservative, and they have 15 panned fish that are combined species, bluegills, crappies, that sort of thing. Wisconsin also has a combined limit of 25, and Michigan has 25. They recently reduced it from 50. So ours 15 per day is one of the lowest in the area. And these fisheries in these other states are impacted from the same year advancements and social media and all the things that are affecting our perch fisheries too. So if there's an impact that needs to be addressed, we should start seeing it in these other states with higher daily limits before it comes time that we would have to do that. One other point I want to make on limits is that our data from Creel suggests that really a small percentage of angler trips result in a limit. Really about 25% of our total angler trips actually result in a limit of fish. And a very small minority of our angler trips, of these very advanced anglers that the folks are talking about, whether it be guides or clients, and harvesting lots of fish on a very regular basis, they probably represent less than 10% of our anglers total. But they do harvest a lot of fish, and I don't want to discount that. Another factor this year is very timely that we're talking about this. In southeast South Dakota, we have 23 perch lakes down there. And this year, we got a lot of them that might be in trouble. With low dissolved oxygens have already been seen in 10 of them. We've had 9 winter kills in these lakes since 2010. And we've had 13 winter kills in these lakes in the last 20 years, some of these lakes more than once in that period. So restrictive regulations on some of these marginal waters that we can lose to winter kill is not a good management strategy. So kind of to summarize what I've talked about here is we have high quality perch populations that can vary wildly from year to year. These are very much boom and bust fisheries, and perch are a resource that should be harvested, we feel like. Because of that short lifespan, It takes about 3 years for a perch to get desirable to an angler in the 9 to 10 inch range. And really, there's only one more life probably expected. So if an angler catches it in that short window, we feel like we ought to allow the person to harvest it. High natural mortality makes that restrictive regulation a poor choice because, again, they're very short-lived in these high-quality populations. And then environmental conditions are very large drivers, things we don't control, you know, what the weather's like in the spring, what the weather, you know, the temperature and the water levels are. We know that we see increased natural reproduction and growth during high water periods. The winter kill potential does exist in many of these eastern South Dakota lakes where this regulation would go on. And again, that's a poor choice on a winter kill potential lake. And then South Dakota already has some of the lowest perch limits that we have. And South Dakota has extensively researched. We feel like we know. We've got a pretty good handle. And I think the biggest challenge, I understand the new technologies. There's no doubt there's more fishing pressure. The people are becoming more efficient. Social media, there's no such thing as a secret bite anymore. So I do understand the petitioner's concerns, and we are aware of that. But we feel like what we know about these jumbo perch populations are that they die very quickly after they reach a size that's interesting to anglers. And we don't feel like making the anglers return that fish to the lake. If it doesn't result in anybody else ever catching that fish, there's really no point in doing this. Accept it as a harvestable resource and wait for Mother Nature to provide the next big year class. And we have continued to see that hot perch bite. It never goes away. It just kind of moves from lake to lake in the Northeast. And luckily, we have hundreds of lakes up here, and it's worked well. So we feel like it can continue to work well without this change. So at that point, I would be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mark. Any questions from the commissioners on the presentation or the petition we have before us? Director Kirschenman?
All right, Madam Chair. Mark, thank you for the presentation. I hope you as a commission body felt that was a good use of time. It was very good, valuable information to give a 30-year window of what's happened in perch management across South Dakota and what it means, what happens in our different bodies of water that are the higher quality and lower quality, and what that means to the overall perch population and the information that you do have in front of you. So we thought
this is Clint Hay. Sorry, I just had a quick question for Mark, if he could answer it, because I understand him and I have talked before about the high water cycles. So we had a very high water cycle back in 2018-19, which in turn, he's saying if we have high water, we're going to have a perch boom. And we have quite the opposite of a perch boom right now after that high water. Does he have any explanation for that?
Clint, we'll go ahead and allow it. Mark, are you able to answer that for Mr. Hayes?
Yes, I can. And he is right. We did anticipate with high water, we typically see good perch production, and we're about 3 years out from 2020. We did anticipate high perch numbers from that event. And I will tell you, he's right. The data doesn't suggest that we had a very good year that year. So there's no guarantees. I mean, high water, we say it increases the chances of having good perch production, but no, there's no guarantees in our waters. And for whatever reason, the conditions that spring did not produce good perch abundance. So I think, you know, a year like this, we're certainly going to see a 1 to 2 foot rise in our water levels. And again, we should be in a pretty good position to hopefully have good perch production. But again, I would never guarantee that because that doesn't always happen.
Thank you, Mark. We're going to go to Director Kirschenman now for your portion of the...
Very good. Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, Mark, thank you for the time of the presentation. So I think Mark summed it up very well with the presentation and the summary slide there at the tail end of the presentation. And again, Mr. Hay and some others had shared petitions at the January Commission meeting on this various topic. And they brought the request back for the change of from 15 to 10 in eastern South Dakota, maintaining the 15 in west. And Mark provided that summary slide, and I think his data and information explained very well and probably understands why we continue our stance of our recommendation of denial of the petition based on what we have learned, what we know, and these bodies of water and what happens with yellow perch populations across the state, in particular in eastern South Dakota. So again, Mark summarized it very well at the end and talking about how they are fast-growing, short-lived species in particular. Many of our lakes, we do encounter winter kill situations on some bodies of water, and by far we also know that many of these fish in certain lakes are all of a sudden gone by natural mortality within year 4 to 5, and the opportunity for our anglers to harvest them versus that natural mortality is a positive thing in our mind as well. So again, based on the presentation that Mark offered and provided you the information, again, we would stand where our recommendation was back in January. Obviously, we're going to continue to watch this close. This is something that we know is very important to our anglers. It's important to our agency. Ice fishing is extremely popular in South Dakota and probably no more popular than northeastern South Dakota. We want to have the opportunities available for our anglers as well, and we will continue to watch this. And as things change, develop, or we learn more through our efforts, then we will take those appropriate actions into the future and bring them to you as a commission body as well for your consideration. So, Madam Chair and the members of the commission, I would offer to you for the petition from Mr. Hay and the very similar petition from Mr. Morris that we would recommend denial on each of those petitions. I will turn it back to you if there's any other further questions for us as an agency. And I would also recommend if you decide to go through the denial stage or acceptance of these, take each one individually just so that we have that on the record, regardless of what direction you as a commission want to go. So,
very good.
Madam Chair.
Any questions from the commissioners for Director Kirschenman at this time? No questions. I would just say I appreciate the slideshow that Mark put together. This was one of those issues where I was very unfamiliar, and I think he answered every question that I had in my mind and then some. So thank you for putting that together, the time, the information, the science, the data, everything to help us up here move forward. So with that, I would entertain a motion.
Commissioner Whitmer, move to deny the petition. Just a little more on that. I guess thank you to Mr. Irmer for the great presentation. I'm also reminded of all the fishing that I did on some of these lakes as they came up being from that area. But to part of it on the perch thing, as these lakes matured, the original fishery, I guess, was kind of perch fisheries. But as they years went on, they were established as walleye and northern as well, and the predators are in there too, and it's just a more complete fishery today in many cases where it's not primed for a perch explosion. And there's just a lot of dynamics, and I think the presentation showed that well. I do move to
second.
We have a motion to deny from Commissioner Whitmire, second by Commissioner Beese. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Those opposed? And we are denying the petition. So, Commissioner, or Director Kirschenman, that would be for number 179. Would you suggest we also take 181 at this time?
I would, Madam Chair, okay. Just to have the on the record as well.
So with that, I would ask for a motion.
Also
moved by Commissioner Bartling.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Locken. All those in favor for denial of petition 181, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Aye.
We are moving to deny 181. All right.